As we look now at the newly confirmed direct connection between a white supremacist leader and the digital director for one of Trump's staunchest supporters in Congress, we're joined in New York by Hunter Walker, an investigative reporter at Talking Points Memo, where his exclusive new story is headlined, Capitol Hill staffer is a prominent follower of neo-Nazi Nick Fuentes. Fuentes is a far-right leader who rose under Trump. The staffer, who is revealed in the piece, works for far-right Arizona Congressman Paul Gosar, who's linked to organizers of the deadly January 6 insurrection and was censured for posting an animated video on social media where he murders Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and attacks President Biden. That's the Congressman Gosar. Gosar also spoke at the openly racist America First conference organized by Nick Fuentes to compete with the Conservative Political Action Conference, known as CPAC. This news story reveals Gosar's ties to the white supremacist movement go even deeper. Hunter Walker, if you can lay out what you found about his digital director.
Well, Amy, great to see you first off. And as you pointed out, Paul Gosar already has been linked directly and personally to Nick Fuentes. But his relationship with this neo-Nazi leader has been one of alternately embracing him and distancing himself from him. As you alluded to, Paul Gosar has appeared at two editions of Nick Fuentes's America First Political Action Conference, once in person, once by video. But after that second one caused a backlash, Gosar said, you know, Nick has a problem with his mouth, and sort of attempted to disavow him somewhat. So he's operated with a bit of plausible deniability, as he's repeatedly been tied to extremist activity, including, you know, having anti-Semitic websites appearing in his official newsletter. And I think this story, one of the key things about it is it really removes that veil of plausible deniability for Paul Gosar. And what I found is that, you know, this staffer in his office, Wade Searle, evidence appears to link him to this sort of digital persona, Chicken Right, this network of interlinked social media accounts that has put out extremist content, including statements, you know, referring to Jews as quote-unquote hooked-nosed bankers, disparaging Asians, minimizing slavery. And also, in addition to just being a social media account, this quote-unquote chicken persona was a leading figure in Nick Fuentes's organization. And we know that because of accusations from defectors from Fuentes's inner circle who, you know, released internal chats showing this chicken person participating in the leadership conversations, telling them about what was going on in Gosar's office. And then also, he's a moderator on Nick Fuentes's regular stream. So, you know, this guy has been linked to being a prominent follower of Nick Fuentes, who is an outright neo-Nazi. And, you know, the evidence is extensive. These accounts posted pictures that appear to show Wade Searle with Fuentes. It was identified as coming from Searle's hometown, being the same age as Searle. And at its inception, this Chicken Right account was credited to quote-unquote Wade and another person, quote-unquote Landon, who, you know, we believe appears to be Landon Peterson, an intern in Gosar's office. So there are multiple people in the congressman's office linked to this incredibly extremist online activity and Nick Fuentes's Groyper movement.
And explain more, Hunter Walker, how you know Chicken and Chicken Right, C-H-I-K-K-E-N, how you directly linked him, because this is a very serious allegation, to Paul Gosar's office, to his staffer, Wade Searle.
Well, first off, there's no question he works in Paul Gosar's office. You know, we looked at the disclosures.
Right, and but how Wade Searle is Chicken or Chicken Right?
Totally. But one thing that's extremely interesting about that, that I just want to touch on first, is, you know, there was that extreme video about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it was based on an anime, Attack on Titan, with sort of Gosar and Ocasio-Cortez's heads superimposed on the characters of this extremely violent Japanese animation. And anime is a persistent feature of the far right. So that video is kind of an example of how Paul Gosar's social media has already borrowed from these, you know, far right extremist circles. And he actually hired Wade Searle one day, a officially after being censured for that video. So even despite getting slaps on the wrist from his fellow Republicans in Congress, Gosar has repeatedly, you know, on his official accounts, sort of winked and nodded at the far right, even as he, you know, supposedly disavowed him. What we found with Wade Searle, you know, is just so many links. I mean, first off, Gosar joined Gab, the extremist social media site, right after Searle joined his office. At that point, he started reposting content from Chicken Right. Chicken Right was reposting content from Gosar. At points on the Chicken Right accounts, and they're all linked, I mean, there's a Twitter, a Telegram, and a Gab, sort of a overall presence that all has these internal links promoting itself, an Instagram page that was credited to quote-unquote Wade and quote-unquote Landon. And all of these interlinked accounts promoted extremist content, promoted Gosar, talked about insider knowledge of Arizona Republicans. And then, you know, the two most dramatic moments came as Wade Searle took his activism beyond social media. And Searle appeared to join Fuentes at a 2020 Stop the Steal rally. In addition to being a neo-Nazi, Fuentes was a big election denier whose followers had a major presence at January 6th. And you can see a man who appears to be Searle standing behind Fuentes at one of these rallies in Phoenix, Arizona, where he called Trump's loss a quote-unquote fraud. And, you know, photos of that man were posted on the various Chicken Right social media pages, as well as, you know, Wade Searle's more public named social media. So he posted his own photos, various things in the content, such as his hometown, the credit in the bio, seem to link him to this activity. And then, most importantly, you have these defectors from Fuentes' organization, a man named Simon Dickerman, who has named Wade Searle as Chicken Right. This was sort of an open secret on the far right. I came across it, and then I joined with two researchers, Haley Orion of Arizona Right Wing Watch and Nick Martin of The Informant, and we pooled all of the information we'd found. And, you know, it just really appears to definitively show that Wade Searle was behind these accounts. But, you know, he has been previously named by his own colleagues on the far right.
And so what has been Gosar's response to your investigation?
Not much. You know, yesterday, the only thing I noticed from Gosar is that, you know, he shut off comments on his tweets. He blocked replies. And I think that's a really, really important thing here. You know, I noted before that he was censured for this extreme video about Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. Since then, he's actually been brought back onto committees after having them stripped from him, including the extremely powerful Oversight Committee. Not only did we reach out to Gosar to give him an opportunity to, you know, comment and reject this in any way, you know, or to say that he didn't know that this was happening, but we reached out to Speaker McCarthy, and he's offered no response whatsoever. And Democrats have offered, very limited response from what we've seen. And one of the reactions I'm noticing is just because of Paul Gosar's extensive history, you know, winking and nodding at the far right, speaking at Fuentes' events, people have said they're not surprised. And, you know, I would just note that you were talking earlier about the alarming rise in white supremacy in this country and white supremacist organizations. Getting an inroad on a Capitol Hill staff is a major, major, you know, turning point in that movement. It's a major bit of growth for them. And if we start to reach a point where we say we're not surprised by this, where we say, you know, we expect this in Congress, then we're allowing it to become normal. And I personally find this shocking, and I think we should remain shocked by it.
Hunter Walker, we want to thank you for being with us, investigative reporter at Talking Points Memo. We'll link to your exclusive new report. Capitol Hill staffer is a prominent follower of neo-Nazi Nick Fuentes. Oh, by the way, another news from Capitol Hill. A man armed with a metal baseball bat attacked two staffers at Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly's district office in Virginia Monday. The man arrived at the office, reportedly said, "Where's Connolly?" It's unclear what motivated the attack. A young woman who was an intern at the office on her first day of work, he beat her with the baseball bat, as well as a senior staffer. He slammed him in the head. They were hospitalized. They are out from the hospital now. Next up, an update from human rights advocates just back from the U.S.-Mexico border as the Trump-era Title 42 policy ends. Stay with us.
el desaparecido. Cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy. Deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido. Cuando me buscan nunca estoy. Cuando me encuentran yo no soy el que está enfrente, porque ya me fui corriendo más allá. Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, pero esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un dolor que no me deja respirar. Llevo en el cuerpo una condena que siempre me echa a caminar. Me dicen el desaparecido, que cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido.
Desaparecido by Manu Chao. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. For the rest of the hour, we're hosting a roundtable discussion on the human rights crisis unfolding on the U.S.-Mexico border and the impact of President Biden ending the Trump-era pandemic policy known as Title 42 last Thursday, after it had been used to expel nearly 3 million migrants without due process. A lawsuit filed Monday argues Border Patrol has now forced many migrants into makeshift open-air camps that violate custody standards. We're joined now by 3 guests. All of them are just back from the border. 2 of them joined a delegation monitoring the situation. In Santa Ana, California, Gerline Joseph is with us, co-founder and executive director of the Haitian Bridge Alliance, an immigrant advocacy organization that provides humanitarian assistance to Haitians and other Black immigrants from the Caribbean and Africa. In Mexico City, Erica Guevara Rosas is a human rights lawyer and America's director for Amnesty International, also part of the delegation. And in Tijuana, Mexico, Erika Pinheiro is an immigration attorney and the executive director of El Otro Lado, a binational nonprofit helping immigrants on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. We welcome you all back to Democracy Now! Erika Pinheiro, let's begin with you. Talk about what's been happening this past week with the end of Title 42. What are you most concerned about?
Well, unlike all of the predictions, we did not see a surge of migrants. We did have many migrants who had been waiting patiently, some for years, to seek asylum at ports of entry, who were left with a lot of fear and confusion about the end of this policy because they had heard that the Biden administration's new policies would actually further restrict their access to asylum. And so when Title 42 ended, many of them tried to present themselves at the port of entry, which is consistent with the law and consistent with what Customs and Border Protection told us would be possible. But instead, they were turned back and made their way into these makeshift camps that, thousands of people ended up in by yesterday. And so in these makeshift camps, Border Patrol was not letting people leave, but they were also not providing food. They were not providing water. They were not providing medical care. We saw babies as young as 3 months, elderly people as old as 80, people with medical emergencies, just a lot of people suffering without food for up to 7 days. And so over the past 24 hours, Border Patrol has finally started to clear these camps out. But, you know, it's important to understand the larger context of what's happening right now. After Title 42 ended, there were actually half as many people entering the United States. But Border Patrol made a choice to hold them in these open air encampments without access to food, water or medical care, to try to create the impression that there actually was a surge when that's not what we were seeing at all. So my biggest concern is that that will continue to happen on the border. That will be like a political show rather than them using the capacity that they have to process asylum seekers in accordance with the law.
During a news conference last week, journalist April Ryan questioned Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas about Border Patrol agents on horseback chasing, grabbing and whipping Haitian asylum seekers. She was referring to that 2021 series of photos and video footage from Del Rio, Texas, that sparked a national outcry.
The southern border is not just Mexicans, it is Haitians, it's Africans, as we've seen, particularly with that issue with the Haitians being whipped with the reins or the horses. But what is there?
Well, let me just correct you, right? right there, because actually the investigation concluded that the whipping did not occur.
I'm sorry, I saw it differently. They were whipped with something from the horse.
Gerline Joseph, I wanted to bring you into this conversation. Your organization, the Haitian Bridge Alliance, is representing Mirage Joseph. He's a Haitian who was whipped by a U.S. Border Patrol agent while attempting to bring food to his family. Can you talk about what happened to him? Also, about an image of a U.S. Border Patrol commemorative coin that seems to be glorifying the violence against asylum seekers that we're showing on air now for our TV viewers.
Thank you so much, Amy. The reality is what Secretary Mayorkas just mentioned is absolutely heartbreaking to hear, because he knows that the investigation that was conducted by the administration only looked into 30 minutes of the entire week-long ordeal of abuse that we all saw in September 2021. And as you could see, them celebrating using that coin that depicts the image of Mirage Joseph in the most inhumane and abusive and humiliating way. And we can clearly see that the officer, the man in horseback, holding him, holding his person with his hand, and we could clearly see the whip on his back. So to say that is really unbelievable, but we all know that we have heard they only looked into 30 minutes of the whole ordeal where people were abused in the most inhumane way, and really brought us back to a time of slavery as we are looking into anti-Black racism and extremism into the United States. That is a pure reflection of that, and it did happen. And we continue to push to hold accountability to the administration. We have filed a lawsuit on behalf of Mirage Joseph and 11 others who were under the bridge. And we also want people to understand that over 21,000 people have been deported to Haiti, including Mirage Joseph, including his family, his little girl who turned 2 years old, under the bridge where he was bringing food to them, because in the United States we were not providing the bare necessities for them. That is the reality that we continue to live, and that is the reality that we continue to see at the U.S.-Mexico border, where people are patiently waiting and trying to use CBP-1 to get an appointment, which has been proven to be extremely difficult, especially for people with darker skin colors.
And April, Ryan had a bigger point going right through to today in 2023, is how in particular Black asylum seekers, Black refugees are being treated or being protected. And she made the point that the Black Americans who went into Mexico and were killed by gangs, that they were mistaken, it's believed, according to the gangs themselves, for Haitian refugees. Can you talk about this issue, bringing it right through to today and what we've seen even in the past week, and what you think needs to be done, Gerline?
Amy, once again, this is heartbreaking. When that happened early in March, I spent the entire weekend reaching out to both sides in Mexico and the U.S. to try to identify those people we saw. Because at first, I was frightened because we could not identify them. We clearly saw, if it wasn't for the video and the pictures that went viral, those people would have been lost without a trace. Whether they are U.S. citizens with a U.S. passport or they were Haitian refugees, the moment Black people arrive, they do not matter. The reality is, whether you are from Haiti or the United States, the U.S.-Mexico is unsafe for them, because we clearly said you can be killed, disappeared, kidnapped at any time. But if the only reason why we were able to really discuss that is because they found out that they had American passports. And I will tell you that I personally spent the entire weekend pushing both in Mexico and in the U.S. to identify those people and try to locate them. And it wasn't until that Monday we finally had heard that they were U.S. citizens and they were mistaken for being Haitian migrant, Haitian asylum seekers, because they are prey. They are vulnerable. And when they are taken, there's no recourse. There's nobody to speak on their behalf. And we continue to see the entire system is fully rooted in anti-Black racism on both sides of the border.
You've gone to funerals of Haitians who have died in Mexico?
We have had funerals almost every month of people who have died in Mexico. We unfortunately just lost a little baby girl who was born in Reynosa, and we tried to get an emergency evacuation to get her to a hospital in McAllen. Unfortunately, it was too late. So we literally buried those we can find, and those who just disappear without a trace. We cannot even tell you how many people have just disappeared without out of trace. Whether they are Haitians, indigenous women, Black and brown, they disappear without a trace every single day at the U.S.-Mexico border. And we specifically continue to bury people every single month.
I wanted to bring Erica Guevara Rosas into this conversation. We're speaking to you in Mexico City, the Americas Director for Amnesty International. Can you talk about how Mexico is cooperating with the United States? President Biden just had, I think it was an hour-long conversation with AMLO, the president of Mexico, and what you think needs to be done, the effect of this cooperation between the two countries on the issue of migrants.
Title 8 are the latest example of how the U.S. is outsourcing law enforcement and migration and refugee policy, not only to Mexico, but to other countries. Under Title 8 now, the Biden administration is also trying to outsource refugee policy to countries such as Guatemala, Colombia. They've been agreeing with other countries, including Canada, to try to prevent people from crossing the border. And Mexico, unfortunately, has become complicit of the human rights violations that people are facing, particularly those who are seeking asylum. The United Nations has just calculated that around 660,000 migrants are stuck at the border. Many of these people coming from countries such as Haiti, such as Venezuela, countries in Central America, Cuba, that we know very well are people that are escaping massive human rights violations that are seeking asylum. The Mexico situation, as we saw a few days ago with this Haitian British Alliance delegation, we visited camps in Matamoros, in Reynosa, and we were able to witness the inhuman conditions that people are experiencing in those camps. It's thanks to local organizations, to individuals that are providing assistance to those people in need of protection, that they are able to receive some food, some medical attention. But in reality, both governments are not fulfilling their international obligations to provide assistance and protection to those people that are seeking asylum or are trying to seek asylum. And under the new rules, the situation is going to be even more complex because people are going to continue to be stuck in these very dangerous areas in Mexico, these border areas that we know are totally controlled by organized crime and are putting at people not only, at the dangers of trying to cross the border, but also they have been exposed to serious human rights abuses such as kidnapping, killing, and many other things. We have heard from families in those camps horrible experience while they are trying to transit the country. When they cross the south border of Mexico and they are trying to transit the country in order to get to the north side of the country. And unfortunately, all these situations, all these abuses, all violations of human rights are in total impunity because Mexican authorities are not investigating, creating paths for people to transit in safety ways. And on the contrary, Mexico just announced that they are going to prevent people from traveling to the southern border, to the north of the country. They are not going to provide with any transit visas, so they are forcing people to find other ways, other paths that unfortunately are continue to expose them to the violence committed by the organized crime.
You have said that organized crime is one of the biggest beneficiaries of these policies. But can you also talk about the federal prosecutors in April in Mexico filing charges against the nation's top immigration official over that fire in the border city of Ciudad Juarez, right across from El Paso, which killed some 40 migrants?
Amy, 40 migrants were killed under custody of the Mexican state. They were detained, arbitrarily detained, only because of their migration status. We saw the images of authorities, the indolence of authorities while people were, you know, in a place on fire. They didn't do anything to protect them. They didn't do anything to rescue them. And unfortunately, 40 died. And many others continue to be injured. Some of them continue to be at the hospital. The investigation that is being carried out has been already led to the detention of some authorities, low-ranking authorities that were present at the detention center. The National Institute of Migration director has been also brought into the investigation, but he continues to be in his position. He continues to manage the immigration policy of Mexico. He continues, unfortunately, to create conditions for migrants to be at risk. The militarization continues under the National Institute of Migration, and we don't see, unfortunately, that this investigation is going to lead into real justice for those who were killed in this horrible, horrible situation in Ciudad Juarez.
And when we talk about the other side of the border, our side, the U.S. side, Erika Pinheiro, your group, El Otro Lado, and other groups have filed a civil complaint about grave violations of rights in the U.S. committed by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents, namely Border Patrol agents, who for months have used an open-air corridor between the primary and secondary walls west of San Ysidro Port of Entry in California as a holding area for migrants without complying with custody standards. Can you explain what's happening there and what we should understand about the border right now?
Yeah, so we've had this camp of several hundred people right across the border from San Diego for the past week now. It was finally cleared yesterday after a lot of noise made by civil rights organizations like my own and others who are working along the border. Like I mentioned earlier, Border Patrol is holding people in this area without providing even the minimum food, water, and medical care, even for people who are medically vulnerable. And we've also seen several other camps further east in remote desert areas with over 1,000 people who are being held in similar situations. So right now, the camps have been cleared because of the advocacy of many organizations along the border. But we've already seen new arrivals into this area. And it's really important to understand that Customs and Border Protection is the largest federal law enforcement agency in the United States. It's larger than all other federal law enforcement agencies combined. They supposedly were preparing for a surge at the end of Title 42, and they're not processing people at ports of entry. So the decision to leave people in inhumane conditions, again, is a choice. It's a political stunt trying to make it look like the border is not orderly, that there's a crisis and that there's a surge, when in fact the only crisis is the way that Border Patrol dehumanizes migrants who are only trying to seek protection in the United States.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation in Spanish after the broadcast, and we'll post it on our Spanish website. You can go to democracynow.org and click through. Erika Pinheiro, immigration attorney, executive director of El Otro Lado. Gerlin Joseph, with the Haitian Bridge Alliance, heads that organization. And Erika Guevara Rosas, America's director for Amnesty International, speaking to us from Mexico City. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rose, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 21st to the 25th. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Featuring genre-defying indie alternative artist Barty Strange as guest curator, garage rock chameleons Osays, Chicago-based indie rock three-piece Dead, Latin folk innovator Helada Negro, Toronto's viral hip-hop sensation Akintoye, gothic folk artist Emma Ruth Rundle, alternative R&B hip-hop artist Amindi, and plus many more. There's 150 artists yet to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.